Hello and welcome back to the UK's number one retro gaming podcast, The Retro Asylum. Jimbo here, and I'm joined by the podfather himself, Mr. Chris O'Regan. How are we doing, Chris?
Chris 1.0, loud and in effect.
In effect. Episode 359, mate. 360 next.
Wow. Well, that's topical, isn't it?
Hello.
Yeah. Kind of. If you listen to this at a time when the Xbox is no longer a thing, then, you know, that's why, because we're talking about it just when Microsoft are deciding to drag outside and shoot in the back of the head for reasons best known to Microsoft.
The 360 was a grim view.
Sorry, everyone. I shouldn't have said that. But anyway, I did it anyway.
Yeah. The 360 was good, though.
Better than good. It was a magical time. Magical time. Despite the Red Ring of Death, which I experienced three times.
Three times.
I think it's three, maybe two. No, it's two.
Not all on the same separate consoles.
Separate consoles, yeah. But yeah. I tried to mitigate against it. Every time I tried it, it failed. Because I remember getting an Elite one, thinking, oh, I'll be fine. And just as I was playing this Viking game, all of a sudden these strange textures started to appear on the screen. I'm like, oh, and then it just imploded. And then the next time it failed, I was playing Lumines on it, I think, something like that. And it just died as well. So, yeah, I remember it was around the time that the GTA 4 came out, so I had to play GTA 4 on the PS3 instead. Which wasn't the lead console. It wasn't the lead platform for it. So, anyway.
Games like that. Yeah, that's far too modern.
What have you been up to then, Jim? You've been out and about, haven't you?
I have been out and about. We had the Retro Collective meet-up, didn't we, a couple of weeks ago?
We did. That was fantastic.
Very good, yeah.
I think I fell in love with Q-Bert all over again. That was lovely. Forgot how fun that game was.
It's not one of my go-tos, I'll admit.
This is for me. I've got a special place in my heart for that game. I don't know why. But then we also, the retro sort of like the museum stuff at the top, it's really, yeah, interesting stuff they got up there. You played Rick Dangerous, much to my chagrin.
I did.
John V did as well. And it's really lovely to see everyone who could show up, who did show up. Had a great lunch at that place that were terrified of us
a big crowd of us walked in.
A crowd of middle-aged white men marching up and like, and the look on the face of the staff were like, what is this fresh hell? And, you know, they did feed and water us, though. They did.
And because
the strange thing that happens is that you're there from 11 till 2.
Yeah,
they kick us all out.
They're 2 3-hour sessions, aren't they?
Yeah, and then they let you back in from 3 till 6. Yeah. So you've got this hour. And Dean went, oh, is this coffee shop down the road? And we started walking down this path of murder path, which is got this overhanging bushes everywhere and could hide many a body on this path.
It was
very scary. But then we managed to emerge, and it was just rather nice, rather, you know, very nice, coffee sort of like cake shop thing. And yeah, they were horrified by our presence. But anyway, we managed to get food fed and watered. But then the arcade games, that was the big sort of pull for most people. And they're all working in order eventually. I think Battlezone, when I came out, wasn't initially working, but they did turn everything on eventually. But yeah. Mm.
Yeah. 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 We've both been there, haven't we, a couple of times. Yeah, great place. Great to see that there's always something. Feels like there's always something different going on. Obviously, they're doing the big sort of warehouse sort of bit outside, aren't they, at the moment?
Yeah, I did the tour of that, and then
very good.
Kicked in my day job and started saying, "What's up about that?
How are you doing this? No longer allowed to open." Chris,
I actually condemned it. I did condemn it. So you're welcome, everyone.
Good while it lasted.
They had done a new video on that installation, and it's going well. I thought, good luck to them, really. Good luck to them.
Yeah.
Okay. And then you went to Blackpool, didn't you?
I didn't, mate. No.
One of us did, didn't we? One of us got there.
don't think any of the hosts went.
Oh, okay.
Reese, I know Reese went, who was Reese, at
That's right.
But yeah, I
because it was the weekend after we did.
That's right.
Yeah. And yeah. Oh, by the way, we did have a nice meal in the evening. That was nice.
Oh, we did. Yes. Yeah.
A burger sort of pizza joint.
Stroud Brewery. Yeah.
In a shed in an industrial estate. Again, I thought I was going to get killed, but no, it's perfectly legit.
Only take it to the best places, Chris.
Clearly. And so, but yeah, this industrial state, Middleton, and I stayed in a ridiculously expensive Perrier Inn, and it went very, very well. But yeah, I had fun times, a lot of fun times I had, and although there was engineering work, so the trains weren't working as well as I'd like. So,
oh no,
oh boy,
yeah. Oh no, yeah. You made it there on time though, so.
Just about, yeah. Got an Uber straight from the station and I was there. It was great. It was bang on time. I was rather proud.
Half the journeys are all right. You've got to take that. If you're going on public transport, you've got to take that.
Well, absolutely. On the way back, though, the coach driver from the train station didn't know where he was going. He had to get guidance from passengers. It's just tragic. Absolutely tragic. And I almost missed my connecting train to London. I managed to get on it by 10 seconds. I wasn't happy, but I was fine. I got home. I got home safely. It's what matters. So, but yeah, I do like Play Expo and I've been Blackpool, although I've never stayed in a hotel. Just don't. Yeah. It's notorious. Norbrick Hotel.
It's one of the expos that continues to elude me. I wanted to go this year and then it just worked out. We had the collective meet up. We got and then I'm meeting up with Chris and Dave Jarman. We're going to go in Strikes Free. We're going to go off and watch. Was it the Metal Gear concert and Counting Crows? That's all in like one weekend. And then we've got the Spectrum, the Crash Live event.
Oh, yes. Yes. Oh,
and I wanted to go up to some of the guys have gone up to Arcade Club this weekend.
They did,
and,
yes.
Yeah, Mrs. Mids was like, look, you need to wind your neck in a little bit.
It's Yeah, yeah, so, yeah. No, I get it.
Priorities were
no, absolutely. There are limits. Speaking of hotels and bookings, right? Ready for this? Right.
Go on.
So, the UK Games Expo, which is the largest board game expo in the UK and almost of Europe, although Europe's got Essen. That is like it's got about 80, 86, maybe 90,000 people attend that. Over a weekend, and it's just board games.
Just a few.
Yeah. And it's at Birmingham NEC. And so this year, I'd left the hotel too late, so I ended up booking this horrific hotel, which was miles away in the airport, which is not really near the NEC at all. And I had an awful time walking back from that. It was just terrible, terrible. So I went, okay. I am not doing this again because there's this other hotel called the Moxie, which is like 2 minutes walk from the NEC itself.
They're
not
quite
just,
nice, aren't they? The Moxies,
they're
quite
amazing,
modern?
They are very modern and they're very, I went Marriott, I think they're part of the Marriott group. I went, I'm gonna go there this next year, I'm gonna do that. And I asked a friend who was staying there. You know, this year's expo. I said, well, you went to the Moxie. Yeah, when did you book that? Quote, unquote, I'm not kidding. She said, dead in the face, she said, oh, October. Now, bearing in mind that this expo is in early June. She booked it in October the previous year. So I went, I better do that then. So today, I sat down on my computer. I had on my desktop a link to the hotel. I went, okay, here we go. Did it. I booked my hotel room.
Have you got
in October? Yeah.
They've announced the dates.
Yeah. So it's like, and when I booked, they only had two rooms left.
No way.
Yeah, because it's, you literally fall out of the expo hall into the hotel. There's just no, so I'm going, oh, this is going to be beautiful. It's like, yes, this is what I want. They are charging an absolute fortune, but my God, it's going to be so, so much better. So, yeah, there you go. Hotel shenanigans, everyone. That's what you come to the Retro Asylum for.
It's just going to be Warhammer miniatures everywhere that weekend in that hotel.
It's going to be
It sounds like, it's not for me, that one, Chris.
No, it's actually board games, but just as bad. But
Same thing, isn't it?
Same thing. Ridiculously complicated board games. So what are we up to retro-wise then? What have you been playing at? I've got things to share on what I've been playing at. What have you been playing at?
Well, the first thing I've been on with kind of brings us on to what we're actually here for today, I suppose. So we were just going to kind of have like a little bit of a chat with a couple of guys, but then we kind of decided, let's make it a full-blown episode and have a catch-up. It's been a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
But, so I've kind of got the competitive gaming bug again. So I've spent way too much on a Master System game, £80 to be precise, on a game that I've already got a copy of, but it's the NTSC version, and that's Castle of Illusion for the Master System. So I've decided. Years ago, I got the PAL speedrunning record over on Twin Galaxies. So I decided I'm going to go for the. I know I can do it because I've done it on a Mister on the NTSC version. But if you want to submit to Twin Galaxies, it has to be on a proper cartridge. So yeah, I've just decided to buy the bullet. I'm going to do it. So waiting out for that to arrive.
It's a good platform, isn't it? It's a good game.
It's a great game. Great game. Loads of nostalgia for it as well. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I suppose that brings me on to why we're here. And we got so everyone obviously knows the King of Kong, Billy Mitchell and Steve Wiebe and all that.
When did that come out?
Oh, the King of Kong? Good question.
It's 20 years, isn't it? Should we check?
Should we check?
I'm not going to hit my keyboard because you're going to hear it clattering away, but I'm going to grab my phone. Hang on.
Yeah, check on your phone.
Check on the phone. Because I think it's older.
Mads has been editing a playthrough episode this week and been sending us constant keyboard tapping.
I think it's older than people think.
I'm going to guess 2012.
Give a guess. Okay,
well, because so Kong Off that's coming to the UK, we're going to be chatting to the two guys that are bringing it over to the UK later on. But the first Kong Off was in 2011. So, yeah, it's got to predate that.
It does. 2007.
Wow.
Let that sink in, everyone. It's 2007. That's 18 years.
God.
Where's that gone? Let that percolate. Let that percolate. Go on. There you go. Where's it gone?
Yeah.
But so we're going to have this Kong Off thing, isn't it? And
it is. So, that kind of brings me on to one of the other things that I've been up to. Mm-hmm. So, ages ago, it was this when Taki Udon brought out his second batch of Mister boards. I bought one of the Mister boards for the arcade cabinet, and it's just sat gathering dust ever since. Because I've been playing using the Pi to jammer. And it did everything that I needed it to, bar the, some of the cave games are a little bit hit and miss, but does everything that I needed it to do. So it kind of sat gathering dust. And then I thought, well, with this Kong Off, I've got no chance of winning, but I'd like to enter. So I thought, well, I'm not going to get a proper Donkey Kong board, but, Mister's the next best thing, isn't it? So I've tidied up the board, fitted a Noctua fan and the proper power supply for it, soldered a proper power supply and all that sort of stuff.
Yep.
And so I've been playing that back on the Mister board. I just want to get my score to 200,000 and so I don't embarrass myself too much.
Impressive feat.
Yeah.
All right. Well, may I share my retro goodness?
You can. Go for it.
I'm going to tip the hat to our good friends at RGDS.
Oh, go on, because I'll take my hands off because I listened to one of their episodes recently.
I do love their episodes. I do commute to work. I don't drive to work. I sit on a train, and I can devour a lot of podcasts in that period. And they did a couple of episodes recently, but the latest one they did was on the PSP, a machine that's very close to my heart. For some reason, and I don't know why, but I really, really got heavily invested in the PSP, not only physically, but, fiscally, because I bought a lot of games for that machine. And I have, I have two PSPs. I think it's a 3000 series, and I've also got a 1000E series, which is the street one, which I think was only released in Europe. It was a strange sort of concoction. It was a slightly cheaper build, but more robust and rugged. And they sold them off very limited supply. So, but I do have one of those too. And also got the Go, which was, you know, not really. But you can modify the bejesus out of those things.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So I might delve into that because you can put in an SD card and all sorts of things and turn them into something quite incredible. But so I've been playing a lot of PSP games on the back of their latest episode. And I was, you know, the games they featured were arcadey sort of driving games. They did Wipeout Pulse. They did, you know, that kind of stuff. And then they did Burnout. The Burnout games are really good on there. But they also did Loco Roco 2, which is one of my favorites. It's a game that gives me so much joy when I think about it. And when
it is one of those games you can't help but smile.
You have to smile.
Yeah.
It's just so happy. And when they reimagined it in Astrobot on the PS5, I just loved that level they did it so well. They did a great job of respecting what Loco Roco was and is. But what's really fascinating is because the breadth of titles that went on the PSP is incredible. You don't know. But there was everything on it. I mean, Assassin's Creed landed on it at one point. You know, Toka Racing run. You know, Colin McRae Rally was landing on it.
Loads of Metal Gear games. I'm playing four ops at the moment.
Yeah, Metal Gear Acid and Acid 2 had 3D glasses on it and everything. It was fantastic. But yeah, good stuff.
Yeah.
But I had a great time messing around with that, and I hooked it up to a large telly as well. But then the other thing I've got to touch upon, because we are, I guess, arriving, is I did a thing, confession time. I bought a thing that I saw at Kickstart 2, the Amiga show last year, and it was called the A600 GS. By Amiga Kit, and it's basically a small black box with an ARM-based emulation station chip system, which allows you to run Amiga software, Amiga's various versions of Amiga, right from 1.3 right up to, you know, AGA, and it has two 9-pin ports in the front. So it's just like you can plug in your old peripherals into the front of it. And people thought this was like another Mini. It really, really isn't. It's a much, much more complex. It's a hobbyist machine, not a. It sounds like I'm gatekeeping there, and I'm sorry. I do apologize, but this is not aimed at the same audience as the 500 Mini. It's aimed at those who want an Amiga, but without the maintenance of keeping that old machine running. That's exactly what it is. So, you know, I've had spent a lot of time installing Workbench on it, and that kind of like level of you have to do all that kind of stuff in kind of low level systems that you have to work with. So it is it's not user friendly. I'm not going to lie to you, but once you get it going, it is amazing.
Absolutely amazing. You can do that stuff with the Mini as well, can't you? If you wanted to, you can dive in.
I don't know if you can actually install different versions of Workbench. I'm probably wrong. I'll probably get a lot of people yelling down there. But I don't think you can plug in old original hardware, that's for sure. You can't plug in You can't. So that's the big,
it's
that's
USB
the big change.
Based, isn't it?
And you can also load games using floppy disk as well onto it. So that's a thing that it's got over the so it does it, like I said, it's like a modern Amiga without all the having to maintain it, you know. So it's I'm really enjoying it, but like I said, it is not for the faint of heart. To approach cautiously, everyone. If you're gonna if you're looking for it, if you want an Amiga with, you know, close as you can, having an original Amiga without actually having the faff of keeping it running with, you know, replacing the caps and just keeping it running, maintaining it, which is not because it's hardware is designed to last for 5 years, not 50. So, you know, it's that's the big problem with those stuff. And you can get any keyboard you want. That's the beauty of it. You can actually just place any keyboard and it works. Works every time. So, yeah, I'm really, really liking it. Really, really enjoying it.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I'm intrigued to see where the full size goes from retro games.
We'll yeah, we can't call it the M word, can we? So, yeah, it's the full size.
Don't say the M word.
No, it's the full size one. See, the look, full we're, size one, yeah. We're behaving ourselves, RGL. See, we're behaving ourselves. I know. Just saying. Okay.
Yeah, I'm intrigued to see how that goes because I've got no nostalgia for the Amiga at all. I'd moved on from
computers. I can remember the day when I got my 500 and when I changed over from the ST to the Amiga. I felt I was, you know, betraying my brethren, but the ST was just not being supported anymore, and it was I then shifted to the Amiga, and then eventually 3 or 4 years later, and went to PC, which is the nature of things, and it's not an unusual story.
Well, it was there was kind of two camps. One, we've said it before, like there was two camps. I was in the one, I went Spectrum, Master System. I was just Sega obsessed after the Spectrum. Sega obsessed until Saturn came out, which in hindsight now, yeah, I would have been, if I had my time again, I would have been a Saturn nut, but yeah.
Yeah.
Went the other way.
Yeah. Yeah. There was some really good Saturn games. But anyway.
There was.
There was.
Did we want to do a quick couple of news stories?
I think we should. Let us talk about the news.
Cool. What have you got for us, Jim? Just a couple of quick ones, really. So somehow I'd missed. There's a new Bubble Bobble game coming, which I knew, called Sugar Dungeons. And this is the hook, if you like, for this one is going to be that the dungeons are going to be procedurally generated.
Right.
See how that goes.
That sounds heretical.
One of the things about Bubble Bobble, isn't it? It's so tight. The level design is so tight.
Extremely.
If you throw some sort of AI into it, I don't know. So I'm not too fussed about that. But what I didn't realise is that it includes a port of Bubble Bobble Symphony.
Ooh.
I know.
So enlighten us. Those who do not know what Symphony is, because I do, but tell us what it is.
Bubble Symphony is the one that it came after Parasol Stars. And so after Parasol Stars, they went back to the Bubble Bobble sort of formula. I don't know what it's called. Some call it Bubble Bobble 2? It's such a weird numbering system for
let's not dwell.
Yeah.
Because people start banging on about Buster Move and like, all well, that it's sort just, of Buster Move's the same universe.
They went back to that traditional Bubble Bobble formula.
Right.
It's an awesome game. But port-wise, it got a port to the Saturn, which is great. It's a really, really good port, that. And that was, I think there was a PlayStation version that never got released. And then there was a version, or can you remember the Taito Legends games or Memories?
Yes.
So on the Japanese version of 2, it got a port of that, of Bubble Bobble Symphony. But other than that, it's never had a console release.
Wow.
So that's pretty exciting for me anyway. I love those single screen platformers. Absolutely love them.
So,
love that. And then, fingers crossed, El Taito games have just come over to the Evercade, haven't they? So
yeah, I've been playing on those too. I think you're right. Some of them are a bit.
Yeah.
There's some optimization issues.
We talked, didn't we? For me, it was Rastan feels a little bit quick.
But it hasn't been quite aligned as it should be, but. Damn fine set of games. Really. Bangers, I think.
Yeah.
Trying to think of any major. There's one or. No, I can't really think of any that really were poor. No. Really nice collections. I think Evercade have made a really, really just on the ascendancy here for the last couple of years.
They have, yeah. And did you notice? Again, I didn't know this. The Neo Geo carts have got reversible covers. Sounds really naff. But when you turn them around, they've got the black and gold covers.
Yes.
Yeah. Didn't realise that.
Well, considering that they cost about, a liver, the very least they could do is give us reversible covers.
Wow. So, no, they're not that bad. 18 quid, isn't it?
I'm talking about Neo Geo, the original Neo Geo cartridges.
The Evercade cards.
Well, I'm going to stick with my original joke, though. Yeah, those cartridges were massive. They were bigger than your head. They were amazing. Yeah,
they were. They were. I'm chuffed with that.
Any other news?
Fetrex Mini's been doing the rounds again, hasn't it? We mentioned Blackpool earlier on.
We did, yeah. Also, we might want to have a minute silence for Dean's Vectrex. It's not well at the moment. It's not, and I shouldn't laugh. I mean, if it was hooked up to a life machine, it would be beeping, but it can't.
I feel really bad because I am partly responsible.
What did you do? What happened?
So, well, when we met up at the collective, just before we went over to the collective, I asked him if he would set up my Pytrex. So I bought a Pytrex ages ago, couldn't get it set up. And so this is obviously the Vectrex cartridge. You plug a Raspberry Pi
Zero
to plug that in, and it basically takes over like the CPU sort of thing of the Vectrex.
Yes, it basically the Vectrex screen becomes
the output
of the Pi almost. Although the audio does squeeze out as well. So
I'd got it. I'd got the bits and pieces installed, but I couldn't get anything to run.
Interesting. Okay.
So I gave him the card and said, "Is there any chance you can sort it?" He said, "Yeah, no worries. I've done them before. No problem. Nice one. Cheers, Dean. Take a copy of I lent him one of my games. Was it Space? Where is it? Outer Space. It was. So a couple of games. Actually, got like an Astro Smash port on there.
Mm-hmm.
Got to fill your boots, Dean. Nice one. Thanks a lot." He plugged it into his Vectrex and killed the Vectrex, didn't he?
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you think the Pytrex killed his Vectrex then? Because mine didn't. Well, mine's got a case and everything, by the way.
Mine's a proper cartridge that you plug it into.
It's got a proper vacuum molded case.
Give him a dud.
You can buy it with bare, like, no case at all.
Yeah, just a PCB. But I've had mine plugged into my Vectrex. I just couldn't get anything to play, but it didn't kill the Vectrex. So
No.
Maybe it was just a coincidence.
Probably just a coincidence. But yeah, I think the major, like, is it the ULA or something has died on it? Or it might be the PAL.
I don't know if I had something similar on mine, but mine, so his just isn't booting. He's getting
mine was refurbished about, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago now, but it was refurbished entirely by Mutant Caterpillar.
In 2022, I bought.
Yeah, he sent it back to me and goes, "I'm never doing a Vectrex again," because he said it was just knackered. It was just old. It was like components in it that were just decided to expire. Because I've said it a bit earlier this episode, I'm going to say it again, everyone. Remember, my motto for this year is keep it alive in 25. They're not designed to last 50 years. They were designed to last 5, if that. They were toys. Toys, you know, built-in obsolescence. That's the whole thing. So, yeah, there it is. Cool. Okay, well, I mean,
I'm keeping everything crossed that he can get his Vectrex back to life.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the Kickstarter for the mini Vectrex. I mean, there were some discussions about the controller and stuff, but we've got them lined up for a future episode. We're going to hold our questions now, and just, you can look forward, listener, to when we delve into chatting to them. But I'm a huge, huge fan of Vectrex. I've got it right over here. I've got my custom controller for it. I'm going to show it on the camera now. See, lo and behold, look at that.
Yeah,
look.
Same. Yeah, I've got my Vic stick down here.
Vic stick. I know he's retired now, but he used to do these, and I saw this at, I can't remember what event it was, but anyway, he convinced me to buy one of these. They're very, very expensive, but my goodness, the build quality and the fact that you can rest your hand against it. It's this wedge. Like thing you can rest your hand. It's so nice.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, and he really went to town with the customization of it, because it's not just a regular joystick. It's quite different. They are, you know, you have to do a lot of, because even the port itself, the plug itself, you have to shave off because it, you know, it's a lot of shenanigans.
Yeah.
But this is the man who saw off the tape deck off a Spectrum Plus 2. He did. and you put a photo of it, and people, there was pitchforks and torches outside his home very quickly. It was regarded as heretical. But the problem is it looked amazing. It looked amazing. Yeah. But
there's some awesome controllers in there for the Vectrex and Homebrew and all that. And shout out to Alex, actually, over at Tenpence Arcade, because he did a really good YouTube video.
Yeah.
Owls Arcade over on YouTube. He did a really good video on that, just going into all loads of the sort of homebrew controllers that you can get. Yeah, a really good watch if the Vectrex is your thing.
Yeah, so that's the news, and that's our catch up. Should we segue into the whole? I guess I'll let you do the introductions, Mr. Jim.
Right. Yeah, we are joined by two very special guests. We've got Retro Russ.
Hello. Thanks, guys. Hello.
And we've got Ollie, also known as the 8-Bit Boy UK.
Yeah. Yeah. How are you doing? You all right?
All right. All right, yeah. Thanks for joining us, guys.
Thank you for asking. Cheers.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
We've had a little bit of technical hiccups, but it seems that everything's working now, so we'll crack on. I suppose the floor is... We'll give you the floor, guys, because what this... The original plan was just going to be to have like a little bit of a chat about Congoff and, you know, sort of a half hour sort of chinwag, what Congoff is and everything else. And it's kind of just been chatting, haven't we? And we thought we'll chat a little bit about Donkey Kong itself as well. And we'll just sort of expand it into a bit more of an actual sort of chat and an episode, really. Russ. I can see the Donkey Kong cab there in the background. I believe it, from seeing a YouTube channel, it is a proper,
yes,
kosher arcade Donkey Kong cab.
I finally took the plunge and bought a real one, and I don't regret it for a second. In fact, my gameplay has gone up as a result of using a real one. Can you believe it? So I love it. Totally love it.
Nice.
So tell us a little bit about this Kongoff thing. Let's just open up with that. So you and Ollie, you're clearly involved with creating this extraordinary competition. It's happened in the US many, many, many eons ago. But give us the potted history of this event and how it's come into the UK.
Well, I'll try and summarise it as best I can. I think, to be honest, I've noticed from falling in love with the game, I've been watching anything to do on YouTube to do with Donkey Kong, the cabinets, the gameplay. And then I started watching Twitch to see some of the best players who stream. And through watching that, I got into seeing these American Kongoffs that they had. And in fact, the Australians started having the Kongoffs as well. And I thought, well, wouldn't it be great if we could have one in the UK? And I thought, well, there's only one really obvious place where you would do this if you were going to do it, and that is Arcade Club. So it needs someone really with a bit of momentum or celebrity status to kind of sow the seed to get the best chance of Andy at Arcade Club saying yes. I thought if I went up to him and asked him, he wouldn't know me, I'm nobody. He'd just walk past it and just go, whatever. So I really was kind of hanging on, sowing the seed with other arcade YouTubers who've got a big presence, people like Charlie Farr, going, oh, you live near Arcade Club, actually, Charlie. Next time you're in, why don't you go and chat to Andy and, you know, see if he'd be up for a Kongoff. And you go, yeah, could do. And nothing ever came of that over quite a few years. And then, as it turned out, I know Denmark, a guy in Denmark hosted a Kongoff. I suppose it's unofficial, but he had two cabinets in his garden arcade, and he invited people to come play it last year. And I ummed and ahed and touched Charlie Farr and said, should we go? And in the end, I went, nah, I won't go. And the second we watched it live, we both went, we should have gone. So I said, I would definitely go next year, which is now this year. And so I decided to go this year. It was in July. And while I was there, I was tweeting or Xing, whatever the word is now, on my ridiculously poor social media, just to put it out there that there is a Kongoff happening and we're having a great time here and trying to get a bit of publicity for it. And I know Ollie, who, bless him, has always, over the years, been watching me and supporting my posting of scores, said, this is fantastic. Why have I not heard about this? Have we got anything in the UK? And again, I went, no. But again, why don't you try asking Andy at Arcade Club? And to my surprise, Ollie did. And I'll hand over to Ollie at this point because this is where it takes off.
I guess. I've been watching Russ for ages, long, long time. I've got not much nostalgia for the game, but a few years ago, like a lot of people, I'm sure, watched The King of Kong, the film.
Yeah.
And just absolutely loved it. Even just watching these guys play and the noises that the machine made and just everything really resonated with me. So really loved the game. I play it now and again, certainly not at the same level as Russ and the guys. I thought I would just ask, look, you know, have we got anything like this over here? And he said, no, not at the minute. Why don't you see how far you can get? And I know some of the guys that are involved with Arcade Club, including Andy. So, yeah, I just got in touch with him. I'm connected with him on Facebook and a couple of other platforms. And, I just said, look, we're reasonably, you know, organised already. We just need a venue. The only venue we really want to do it at is up in Bury. So, the rest is history.
So how many cabs are going to be there? I mean, because just to set the scene, it's... I've seen the original one in the US where they had like five or six of them lined up with people playing them all at the same time to compete to get. It's like it is a score challenge, but in face to face, sort of like rather than online and over a period of weeks, it's just one day where people are just hammering this particular arcade game. Happens to be Donkey Kong. We'll talk about why that is later, but. Talk us. What's the? How's it going to look? What, I'm excited now. What's it going to be?
Yeah. So Andy's really taken us under his wing. Just to paint a picture, I'm sure most people have, but if you've not been to Arcade Club Bury, then it's four floors of arcade machines. You know, it's like an arcade gamer's paradise, really. On the second floor, there's a big stage area, which is separate to the rest of the floor. And we've got eight cabs. Touch wood, none of them break down. But, I mean, obviously, Andy started off his collection. He started Arcade Club off with just fixing these machines up on his own, really. And the hobby just grew and into what it is now. So we're certainly in good hands. So, yeah, we'll have the eight cabs lined up on a stage and... Yeah, I mean, it'd be great. It'd be an entire day of people playing from eight cabs at a time, and we'll eventually whittle it down to where there'll just be two people battling it out for the UK champion.
Wow.
It's awesome, isn't it? I think it's great. We've chatted briefly at the Retro Collective, Ross. I meant to catch you in the afternoon, and just time obviously got away with me. But I think it's, we've seen it in Australia. I think it's Sean Tagster, wasn't it, who was who did really well over in the Australian Kong Off, who was previously, what was it, the Arcade Perfect podcast, who was one of the guys on there, wasn't he? Yeah. So we've obviously, it started off in the States, it's gone to Denmark. So it's great that I think it's the UK's gonna get a little bash at it.
More than a little. Eight machines. That's huge. I'm really excited for this. And before we delve into Donkey Kong itself, because I really want to do that, because people don't do that. They just say the name and everyone, there's just an assumption on the part of the audience. You know the game. No, you don't. A lot of people don't. They might have seen the first two screens or maybe one and a half and then go, or that kind of stuff. But anyway, when is this going to happen? When's the date? I don't remember us discussing that.
So it's on Sunday the 3rd of May 2026. Gives us lots of time to prepare and lots of time to practice. So I'm a bit of a novice on Donkey Kong, so I'm going to give myself sort of 6 months to practice and try and improve. We'll see how I get on.
I'm in the same boat, mate. Like I said earlier, we were chatting earlier, and I said, if I can get to 200,000, then I'm not embarrassing myself. I'll take that. I'm never going to win at this, but I'm happy to register. If I could get to 200, then I'll be over the moon with that. I take that as my own little win, which I think you've got to do, aren't you, with some of these games, because they are so difficult, some of these arcade games. You set yourself your own win, and then I think that's what you do, don't you, with the high scores. You set yourself a bar, and once you achieve that, you set yourself the next one. So you're always progressing, you're always aiming for something.
Yeah.
Is that absolutely. The May bank holiday then? Just to remind, it sounds like it is.
Yeah, so it's the May bank holiday.
Extra day of recovery then.
Yeah, initially we didn't know we'd be strike it so lucky to have the 8 cabinets. So we wanted to maybe give ourselves 2 days, but there's no need. We can get it all done in one day with 8 cabs fairly comfortably.
Nice. And there's that. Oh, go on, Chris.
Just ask Russ, what's your involvement? Are you setting up the competition? Are you doing the leaderboards? What's your involvement?
We'll probably split it out between the two of us, to be honest. So we're still in fairly early days at the moment with everything.
Right.
We only talked about getting this going probably 6-8 weeks ago.
Okay.
We only got everything, like the venue and the date, confirmed with Andy about 2 weeks ago. So we're still fairly early. There are a few things that we've got to iron out in terms of exactly how everything's going to work. A lot of that is dependent on how many people want to come, how many people want to register. If we get 200 people come in that want to do it, even with 8 cabs, we're not going to cope. So we're going to need some kind of qualification system. But we've got lots and lots of time to get all of that arranged and organised between us both. Another thing that we've been looking into is we're trying to get a trophy organised. We're trying to do it properly. We're trying to get it all, you know. So,
Worst comes to worst, you just get a joystick and paint it gold. No one's done that before.
Well, we want to try. Yeah. I want to try and make it as good as it can be couple of, you know, it's a couple of guys, normal guys. We're not organized. We've not done this before. The hope, if this goes well, I don't know, maybe we'll do one every year, hopefully.
Yeah.
These things, they've got to start somewhere, haven't they?
Of course they do.
Do you know what I mean? So, yeah,
this
is
just the first, so let's see how we do.
I think we wanted to make the point early on that When I've been putting the idea to certain people already, they've gone, oh, I don't know about that. I'm not that good enough. And I didn't want that to put people off. So at the minute, we were trying to be as inclusive as possible regarding people's levels. Obviously, as Ollie says, if we end up with so many people applying, we're going to have to perhaps figure out a way of cutting it down just to get enough games on the day. But I don't want people to be put off by thinking, oh, I'm not good enough to enter that. At the end of the day, the whole thing, and Ollie would agree, is this was about getting people together, playing this game, but having fun. So let's go with that. And if anything else better than that comes out of the day, then that's a plus. But we just want to have some fun on the day. So nobody needs to take it too seriously. You do on the day, but having competed in the Danish one, believe me, tournament nerves get to you, and even the best players just struggle. So let's just have fun and see if we can make it a day that everybody remembers for having fun. And if so, then maybe we can come back and do it again.
Yeah, it's the heart and the throat stuff, isn't it? You've been playing this game for hours on end, and then for some reason you go, oh no, I'm going to do this. We'll talk about the this in a moment. I'm going to just do that. What's the worst going to... And you just make these ridiculous decisions, which you will never make because you trained yourself not to. And I think the best players are the ones who can actually filter out all the distractions around them and just be them, the controller, and the screen.
Yeah.
And it's that kind of thing. What kind of qualifications are you going to, like, say people? Because Donkey Kong's available legally, I stress this to add, or like you can get it on the Switch and the Switch 2, and you can just, or I think that's the only platforms you can get it on. where you can just buy a copy from on Arcade Archive, I think, on Switch 2. You can get it on the Switch and the Switch 2. So that's, I mean, if people played it on that, you'd still be okay with that, I'm sure, to say that we qualify to say, yep, that's fine. You know, it's kind of emulated, but isn't. And of course, there's going to be people playing it on Mister. That's where I played it recently, today, actually, the time of recording this show. It's a bang on port. Wow. And also, the Next has got a port of the Spectrum, ZX Spectrum Next has got a port of Donkey Kong, which is incredible. Actually, the Spectrum port, which came out last year, was it? This year, I can't remember.
Yeah, last year it was.
That was amazing.
Year. It was really good.
It was absolutely amazing.
But obviously, that's a modern port, isn't it?
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Back
yeah.
in the day, how good was that Amstrad version? The CPC?
Oh, no. Yeah.
We played it on one of the 8-bit wars, didn't we?
I
was blown away. I'd never played it up until the 8-bit wars episode that we did. And I was blown away with how good that
Of course, the ColecoVision is legendary, although it does have a level missing. It's still. Played.
Yeah,
it's quite legendary. That I do like my ColecoVision, which still works. Don't know how, but it does. Just looking down to my left, it's down there. But yes, quite remarkable. But okay, so that sounds really amazing. I mean, you're gonna have a lot of people applying, but I'm just wondering not only that, but also the audience, because I'm gonna go not to compete, because me and arcade games don't get on. You know, turn-based strategy games, I'm all over, right? But when it comes to reactive kind of games, I can't do it. Total War, Warhammer, yay! But, you know, this, I can't. So, but I love, I love watching them being played well. I find it really addictive watching people play well.
Yeah.
So how are you going to deal with the audience, people? You know, people just rocking up, wanting to show up. Any thoughts on that? I know it's early days, but I'd just like to hear that, because I know a lot of our listeners won't necessarily want to compete, but necessarily want to witness the event.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of space. So come down, even if you live nearby, even if you don't and you fancy getting involved and you want to, you know, cheer on and watch some. There are going to be some very decent, very capable players there on the day. Come down and come and have a look what it's about.
Yeah. Fantastic. Might get a hat or something. Merch. Merch. Oh, just the merch opportunities,
sure,
Russ.
Yeah,
oh,
sure,
just alone, it's going to be.
Yeah, we'll have to talk to Andy about that,
They've done away with all that now at Arcade Club. I don't know if you've been recently, but they used to have like the Arcade Club mugs, didn't they?
T-shirts.
They've done away with all that now. It's a little bit disappointing. I do love a bit of merch. I'm a sucker for a mug and a t-shirt.
Yeah, I almost bought something at Retro Collective, but I realised I've already got enough mugs and stuff from them. So, yeah. All right. So, the next question I wanted to ask really is, let's talk about Donkey Kong itself and why this 44-year-old video game still captures the people's imagination. I'm going to put forward some ideas and I'd just love to put it out there. What do you guys think? Having played it recently, unlike many other arcade games of its era, remember it's very early on, it's really random. It's very difficult to predict how it's going to interact with the player. Unlike Space Invaders, for example, or Galaxian and stuff like that, which has patterns of things which you then react to. The only random thing in Space Invaders is the flying saucer. Whereas if you think about Asteroids, that is full of random, which is why it's more appealing, because you're reacting. All the things you do are trying to mitigate against those random effects. Like, should I go up this ladder now, or is there going to be a barrel going down it? You know, is a ladder a point of safety? Yes and no. And it's like, and I just want to ask you, do you agree that this is my observation, that out of all the games, it's much more layered and complex, of course. You have all sorts of things going on. There's like different levels, different sheets, different things happening. Do you think that's the appeal? Do you think it's still, because a lot of what goes on in that game can still be traced right through to, I don't know, the recent Mario Galaxy 2 remake or remaster, I should say. So what does everyone think on that? Because I just find it fascinating. Just like, wow, I can barely control what's going on here. I'm not the center of the universe. I'm just reacting to what's being done to me.
Yeah. I think from its time, being 1981, I think I'm right in thinking that it was one of the first arcade games to have different screens. In other words, if you were to play like Pac-Man in Space Invaders, every time you finish the screen loads again and you're doing exactly the same thing all over again. Donkey Kong had got four different screens. I think it was one of the first to do this. So it had injected a different element of different gameplay for different flavours early on. And I suppose with any arcade game, very quickly, you either connect with the game or you don't. I know a lot of people who would just, you mentioned Pac-Man to them, they go, no, not interested, don't like it, never liked it. So I think it's the same with this, Space Invaders or anything. The game either called you or it didn't. You either felt a connection or you didn't. But having said that, I suppose there is a hell of a lot of randomness with the game, although to a degree the game does settle down from level 5. Theoretically speaking, the difficulty level is now on a plateau and it doesn't get more difficult. Having said that, you still get a certain amount of random, well, a lot of randomness in how fireballs and things, especially the fireballs, react and move on the Pie Factory level, the rivets level. So it's, again, full of randomness, but I suppose if you keep persevering with it, you get a sense of timing. You get an idea of, I want to get to that ladder and I can see a fireball coming that direction. But once you played it so many times, you get an idea of confidence of, I can make it in time. I know how fast it goes. I can make it in time. I can make that jump in time. I can make that leap in time. I can grab that hammer in time before I get killed. So it's all about, there's a certainly a set amount of timing and precision, but there's still a lot of randomness in the game, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I always find, well, I mean, obviously you're a much sort of higher level player than I am, but I find as well, if you're getting like the random barrels, early doors, you know you're in for a tough time. If you don't see those for a little till a little bit later into your play, it kind of weighs a little bit, I say easier, but yeah, do you know what I mean? And yeah. I know a lot of that then becomes, there's timers in the background,
yeah.
So after a certain time, enemies will speed up. There's loads going on in the background of it.
Yeah.
And like you said, you can control the barrels, which is well-known tactic for certain levels. But like you say, there are random elements, but you can learn the patterns in the game.
Definitely the patterns, I suppose, the randomness, it's always there in the background, but you'd get an idea of what you can and can't achieve. Having said that, as I say to a lot of people, if it wants to be a pig, if it wants to just give you a bad screen, the fireballs, I've just got it in for you, they've got it in for you, you know, there's nothing you can do. Yeah. So you just give up. And I think really, I've got myself into a position of telling myself, because I'm chasing to try and get the kill screen now. I've got relatively getting within touching distance of a kill screen. And
which is, so for anyone that hasn't played, how many screens is that in? Sorry to put you on the spot.
It's 21 level. Well, it's actually the start of level 22. And I have counted. There are 117 screens, I think, to get there.
Which is how long in terms of a play session?
If you were to run the board, so to speak, and just go straight through as fast as you can, I think you could probably get there in about an hour and 40 minutes.
Right. Yeah, that's what I've heard as well. It's that kind of, it's, yeah, to be standing there for that period of time. Is there any techniques about, I mean, you can't pause it, of course, it can't be stopped. So what do people do when stay in motion like that, for motionless?
I suppose on the girder level, the very top, when you get to the top, you go up a short ladder to go up to Pauline, and then the level will finish. If you climb halfway up that ladder but don't go to the top, you can technically go and take a very, you know, a 10-second break, because the barrels can't get you and you've not completed. Nothing can get you, but the only thing you have to watch is the clock ticking down. As long as you've got time left, you can literally just go and have a break for a second. We'll catch right. your breath. Yeah. That's right. the only place I'm aware of.
Interesting. Yeah.
Can I bring a stool with me to Arcade Club, Ross? Is that
yeah? Is sitting going to be allowed?
Yeah, I play standing up, but I know nearly everybody else sits down. I'm sure there are going to be stools. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like me and VR. I can't do VR sitting down. It has to be standing.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited for seeing people sort of play this extraordinary game. And it is extraordinary. It is, one of the things also I notice is that the collision detection is a little bit forgiving, isn't it? I found that you can actually almost graze a barrel and it's you don't get hit by it. Maybe it's the version I played on the Mister, but then it's meant to be close to hardware. But am I right in thinking it, or am I just imagining it?
Maybe. There are some positions I have noticed, I thought I'm dead there and the barrel will go straight past me. And I thought, how did that happen? So there is a bit, I don't know where exactly, but it can be. Although I suppose you lose that sense of it being forgiving when you're always dying. You just think it's got it in for you and it's horrific. Yeah. But maybe there is, yeah.
Yeah. But I never feel angry with the game. You know, we've all played games we felt sort of resentful over. You know, Cuphead, I'm looking at you. but and sorry, but it's a marvelous achievement, that game. But my goodness, does it hand you one every 20 seconds? Yeah. But when it comes to for Donkey Kong, for some reason, you just keep coming back because you think you can do better.
Yeah.
And there's something about it that you think, why am I? I know what the risks are because you can see the risk reward sort of mechanic revolving around and around. Like, one of the most satisfying things is when you completely negotiate yourself around a set of barrels without actually jumping. I know it's bad for scoring, but it's still a sense of like, I almost herded those barrels.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Very satisfying when it comes off like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I suppose it's that addictive feeling that I go back for. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
one more try.
Just yeah, one more try.
Yeah. Every time you do lose a life, you're immediately angry at yourself because you go, I could have avoided that. So yeah. it's a kind of every death is avoidable, as I've been told, which is stating the obvious, but it's that which makes you go, I'm going to have another go. I'm going to have another go. Yeah. Because I know what I did wrong last time. Yeah.
Yeah. That's it. That's the trick. Ollie, what's your take on all of this? Do you think am I right in thinking that the game has so many unique properties to it that it stood the test of time?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think the film that I mentioned, The King of Kong, is certainly how I'd heard about the game, but not really its popularity until I saw that quite a lot of years ago now. And I've always, you know, every time I've either gone to Arcade Club or, you know, there's a couple other places in Manchester that have cabs as well now, I've always, you know, sought it out and probably spent far too long, you know, just playing over and over. Yeah, you know, I think it's just one of those things that it's not for everybody, but to a lot, it's, you know, it's the perfect game.
Yeah. So am I right in thinking, Ollie, your background is like sort of similar to mine in that the Master System was the first console, so it wasn't Nintendo. It wasn't
absolutely
familiar. Yeah. So I've watched like some of the stuff on your YouTube channel. It's Master System, which that was my sort of bread and butter. So I didn't come to Nintendo till quite a bit later on.
Yeah, the Master System's kind of everything to me, you know, but I'm getting to the end of a collecting journey and I fancy something different, you know. So this one, I don't know, there's just something about the game that's drawn me in, pulled me in, and you know, I want to give it a go. So we've got this perfect platform now with you know, with the Kong off. So
fantastic. I think there'll be lots of hype over the next 8 months or so.
We'll be, you know, drip feeding more and more information as and when it comes available to us. I think we'll probably put an email list together for everybody to keep everybody updated once they register and whatnot. So,
yeah, I think it's worth shouting out as well, because it is still, there is still a really active community around this game. The Donkey Kong forum is still really active. Like you mentioned earlier, Russ, it's still getting streamed on Twitch.
Yeah.
It's still such an active community around the game, which...
Yeah. Well, it's aligned to the speedrunning community. You know, games done quick, which I've been to a fair few PAXes in the US, and they just love their competitive... you know, it doesn't matter what the game is. Yeah. It could be, you know, well, we're talking about PSP and Loco Roco. I don't know how you do that, but it's just, you know, people are doing that, getting any game and going, there's this thing that happens in it and we can actually see if you do it better. Like, you know, everything from indeed Donkey Kong to the Desert Bus thing. Don't even know about Desert Bus, but as a game that basically is terrible. It's you driving between, I think it's Nevada and Los Angeles, I think it is, on a bus, and the only control is a button on the right that you have to press to stop the bus drifting. That's all you do. It's terrible. And then when you get to Los Angeles, you get one
Flappy Bird with a bus.
It is, yeah. And then when you get to this destination, you get 1 point.
That sounds horrific, Chris.
And then you come back. And the reason I mentioned this is there's a charity, every year there's a charity run with people playing this terrible, terrible game. So if you've got people playing Desert Bus, you know, you can get people playing. Look it up, by the way. I'm not joking. This is a genuine thing. It is a game that all you do is to stop the bus drifting. There's no corners. There's no turns because it's just one straight road. Because the bus just drifts. Because the steering wheel's off. Stupid. But that, everything from this to, you know, I think the zenith of it, things like Donkey Kong, things like Asteroids, that kind of stuff, those games that are timeless, they will always be fun. They will be always, you know, I don't know if you know this, but the coding behind the small ship and the Asteroids, he's a hunter-seeker. That's why he always gets you. But that's why he always gets you, because he's actually, he looks like he's flying around randomly. No, that's why he always shoots. So when you see this small one, you have to take him out, otherwise he will take you out, because that's his job. Didn't know that, but yeah, they had that coding in there. You didn't know, but yeah, it's like, you know, we talked about Bubble Bobble earlier. That's an extraordinary game. And you see, well, is that all the stuff arriving and like dropping down is random? No,
there's nothing. Yeah, it's all predefined. There's timers for everything.
For timers, everything. And the random element isn't things happening, it's the player. The player introduces what you're doing. You're doing in random. And there's a lot of that going on with Donkey Kong as well, because you're trying to mitigate against all these crazy things. Like, I never forget being hit by a blue barrel in the first level. Where'd that come from? It just drifted diagonally right across the screen and smashed me right in the face. I'm like, what? How am I supposed to dodge that? How am I supposed to deal with that? I'm sure there's way. I'm sure you're chuckling there, Russ, going, there's a way. No, not always.
It's a testament, really, because I think what when you watch that film, The King of Kong, just to use it as an illustration, the thing that came out of this is the players who were getting the world records back then, Billy Mitchell, regardless of your opinion of him now, it doesn't really make any difference. What isn't in dispute is the fact in 1982, when Walter Day put that competition together, in front of a live audience, he set a world record of 872,000 on a machine with people crowded around. That's not in dispute. The thing that's incredible about it is we now know, years later, 40-something years later, when people have taken apart the code, we know where the safe spots are, what the springs are doing on level 4 onwards, which allow you to have this precise gap, which you have to go on, to get up the ladder. If you don't at that point, you die. You can't make it. There is one gap you can take to get through. The amazing thing is we know that now from tearing apart the code. Back then, the guys playing it only knew the game as far as they got from pumping quarters in. So credit to the guys like Billy Mitchell at the time for working this out when he had no help, no internet. All he knew was he just kept putting quarters in there until he mastered the game. We're in the privileged position now of playing, having seen what these Pathfinders have done, showing us the easy way, showing us the safe spot, showing us the way you get through that screen, which back then none of those guys knew. So it's incredible to think that they actually worked it out with no help from anyone, which makes them the true masters. And I suppose it's that which we're all trying to emulate. It's that we're trying to give honour to by bringing the tournament up, by trying to keep this game alive and the love for it.
Yeah, it's inspiring, isn't it? Stuff like that. It inspires you. You can't help but it's King of Kong for this example, but you can't help but watching that film and then going.
Yeah, I still remember. I still remember the scene with Steve Wiebe sort of getting a piece of sort of sheet plastic over the top of the screen, and he was drawing little things on the screen on the. Not on the screen itself, but he put a sheet of plastic over it.
Yeah.
Personally, and so it's just drawing on the... I'll never forget that scene.
To take that time to work it out, how do I get through that? There is a way through it, and I'm going to find it.
Yeah.
But it's also, it's an appreciation of watching the masters. In any game, doesn't matter what game, what platform, if somebody is brilliant at it, it's addictive watching them play it. I think at Arcade Club as well, they did have, I don't know if they still do have, a Defender meet, the arcade cabinet Defender, where, again,
I
think
they have that being a thing, yeah.
Yeah, they have a row of cabinets, and Defender is, you think Donkey Kong's hard, Defender is just ridiculous. You need to be an octopus to play it. The controls are just crazy.
How it got past, people, I think it's a spectacle. It's such a spectacle. As is Donkey Kong, it's a real spectacle, I think. The Defender is like, am I supposed to be defending something? You'll come to that later. you'll figure it out eventually. But as you just try and control the ship, good luck with that.
Seeing those guys at the meet, these pro players, handle the game and make it sing. It's a joy to watch because you're watching going, how the hell do you control? How do you make it do this? And it's addictive and therapeutic, ironically, watching them master a game and play it like that when you know that when you have a go, you can't last 30 seconds. So there is something addictive about, as you've said, whether it's a speed run, which is the same thing, watching someone complete a game with complete control and mastery over it is addictive to watch, really.
Yeah. You just doff your cap and go, well, my hand-to-eye coordination isn't what it was. And I sort of say the joke of like, I'm playing a game and I ask my thumb to press a button and it's going, button? Yeah, the one you're resting on. What? Could you press it? What? Yeah. Why? Just okay. This button. Yes, press it now, please. And this is basically.
You can train yourself.
There could be some latency issues going on. I don't know, but in my 54 years of the existence, I haven't got it anymore. I'm not 12. I'm not lying to myself. Whereas turn-based strategy, it doesn't matter. I can sit there for hours, sort of going, and nothing's going to happen. So until I say it does. Jim, you got anything more before we let our guests go? Because I think they're very busy and it's getting a bit late.
I just wanted to ask them if they, obviously we've mentioned the Donkey Kong forums already. You guys have both got YouTube channels. Shout them out. Let people know. Let people know.
Where can they reach you on the internet?
I know, Ollie, like I said earlier, you've got a lot of Master System content on there. Absolutely love that. Always good to meet a fellow Master System fanatic as well. So
Yeah. I mean, if you like the Sega Master System, then you're in good hands. That's pretty much most of my content, and that's what I'm passionate about. Any 8-bit game, really, to be honest with you. But the Master System's what I grew up with. So we're just celebrating the 40th anniversary in the next few days as well, so I'll have a few videos going out just about that, really.
Yeah,
cool. We'll have a link to your show in the show notes and and the YouTube video as well, so we can
Would it be possible for Russ to give out the website so that people know where to go to register?
So we've set up a website where people can register if they would like to enter. It is UK Kong Off.fun, which we deliberately chose to try and symbolise what we're trying to get out there. It's just fun.
That's brilliant. Perfect. Yeah.
Nice.
Hey, well.
You bringing any hot sauce with you, Chris? Or here? Or
I wasn't planning to.
I might wear a wig. I might wear a wig.
Might wear a wig with an American flag tie.
Yeah.
You know, that would be good. Yeah. But just to remind everyone, just to make yourself feel really old, we looked up before we started recording when King of Kong was released.
Yeah.
2007, everyone.
Yeah.
2007. That's 18 years at the time of release of this episode.
Crazy.
So old enough now to go to university. Yeah.
Yeah.
Old enough to know better.
Oh, yeah. But what a remarkable show. The whole villain and the hero thing, it was wonderfully edited. And yes, it was all a bit silly, but I think the whole he's using recording, he's using MAME, and I don't know. It was all very interesting and silly.
It's entertainment, isn't it? It's
And there were some very intense people in that film. So, and I do have a copy of it on DVD. Of course I do.
Yeah.
That's stuff.
Guys, I just want to say wish you all the best with the project. Look forward to the updates. I'm going to register.
Yeah, no chance
of winning, but I will register.
The RA flag, my friend. You have to wear some merch that we have.
Just come and have some fun.
Yes.
Yeah, I'll be there for the T-shirt and the mug, if nothing else.
Don't worry about winning. Charlie Farr's going to win it anyway. He's the best English player.
Are you letting him sign up, are you?
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. Fair enough.
We might spike your drink or something.
I will certainly be going. I'm going to make sure that happens. Mainly for a variety of reasons, but I think we're going to make this a thing for our.
I think we're going to appreciate your support, guys. Thank you.
Yeah,
perfect.
So
the event is the overall winner with everybody who turns up, who wins the overall thing. It's important, but the event is really, it's the occasion. You know, that's the ceremony of it all.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
The amount, the times we've been up to Arcade Club. And you can't help but have a great weekend. Yeah. Yeah. It'll be a fantastic social event, as well as a fantastic event if you want to go and play the game as well.
Indeed.
Awesome, guys. Good luck. Can't wait to follow it. And like I say, and see you there.
Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Cheers, guys. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
From now on, unlike your parents were... You are the secret force of Rental Asylum.
Playing so fast, they're the only ones who can take you back in time. They play old games, they're more retro than J1 Optimus Prime. At home or the arcade for adventures.